Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. My name is Wilma Wolfenstein. I'm interviewing Herman Snyder on September 29, 1993. Would you give your address?
My address is 151 Techview Terrace, Pittsburgh 15213.
Thank you. Would you tell us something about your family of origin?
Well,
where you were born and
I was
when?
Born not far from Vilna, and I had a father and a mother and a sister and a brother. When the Germans when the Germans came on June 27, 1941, they took my family to the ghetto, and I was the lucky one to run away.
How old were you then?
I was 21 then. And after 11 months, on May 9, 1942, my parents, my sister and my brother, and all the relatives were shot by the Germans. And I ended up in Russia, where I lived through the war.
Are you able to tell us about your childhood years?
The childhood was, I started working when I was 11 years old, learning carpenter work. I was learning 6 hours in yeshiva and 6 hours out to build windows and doors and furniture.
At 11?
Yes.
So that was 12 hours that you were working?
Yes, at 6 hours learning how to read and write, mm-hmm. and 6 hours learning the carpenter trade.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then after...
Whose choice was it?
This was my parents' choice, because we were very poor, and I had a sister and a brother, and it was the best for me mm-hmm. to go and learn a trade. And after 15 years of age, then I started working with another carpenter for my shtetl, where I was born.
What shtetl?
Shtetl is Jivenishok. Jivenishok. Jivenishkik.
It's hard to spell that.
Well, you have a piece of paper there.
Maybe we can do that later.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. It's, they call it in Polish Jivenishki, in Jewish Jivenishok.
Mm-hmm. Like a G?
G. Jivenishok. Or Jivenishki. And I was working all the way till the Russians came to us.
Did you?
No, the Russians came first.
Women.
In 1939, September 17th, the Russians came to us.
And
then we lived with the Russians again.
The family left.
No. We lived till the Germans came, and then the story I already told you what happened.
Yes.
And they were shot. They were all shot. 2,400 in one grave, from 5 small towns. And I was left alone. After the war, I married in Russia. We had a daughter. And we came back to Poland in 1946. In 1946, in August, they killed 40 Jews and many wounded. Then I took my wife and my daughter, and we went to Praha, Czechoslovakia. And there we were till the UNRWA. You know the UNRWA organization.
Yes.
was a Jewish organization yes, yes. in Western Germany.
Relief organization, refugee.
Yes, yes, UNRWA, they called it. And they took us to West Germany. We lived in Regensburg, we lived in Opsale, and then we lived in München.
Opsale is that?
Opsale, yeah, Opsale, H-O-F-Sale, S-A-L-E, Sale.
Very Munich.
And then we lived in Munich till 1948. In 48, my uncle, who lived in Mount Pleasant, in Westmoreland country, my mother's brother, when he found out that I was alive, he sent immediately papers for me, my family, to come to the United States. Mm-hmm. We came to the United States April 6, 1949.
You sure know your date.
Not really.
Yeah.
And you were how? I guess we should be able to figure it out.
No, I was born January 1, 1921.
January 1, 1921.
Yeah. I'm 73.
Mm-hmm. So how was your life here? As a refugee, post-war refugee?
My life was always good. Always. I didn't have any problems adjusting to a new way of life. I learned the language. I learned how to read and write. And I concentrated on specifics how to learn to be good at what I was doing and taking care of my family.
Did you come and live with your uncle for a while? You had a daughter and a wife at
yes,
the time?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. My uncle, Sam Levine, in Mount Pleasant, we were there for a while. He gave me a job. He had a furniture store, Sam Levine furniture store. I didn't like to work in his store. Then they sent me to another relative, Kozlov, from the junkyard. Mm-hmm. They were both millionaires. I still didn't like to work with them. And I went on my own for 75 cents an hour.
Why didn't you like to work for them? Because you wanted to do carpentry work? Or
no, the job was fixing furniture for my uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be on my own. I wanted to learn mm-hmm. my trade, mm-hmm. to know more about my profession and mm-hmm. my trade, to be a good carpenter.
Mm-hmm. I feel we've kind of rushed through your youth. Could we go back a little bit?
Sure.
And just talk a little bit more about your, unless it's difficult, your home life in your childhood. And, well, did you have religious education in your childhood?
I did have, in my home where I was born, a religious education. I said before that I was learning 6 hours a day in yeshiva.
In the yeshiva?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's how I learned how to read and write. But I also went to public school during those years. And you live, you work, you are with your parents, you're on your own, and life goes on.
Did you have siblings?
I had a sister and a brother.
Mm-hmm.
They were 2 years younger, each one.
You were the oldest.
The oldest.
But they were executed.
Yes.
Did you then not have any relatives in the town where you were growing up? any relatives left at all?
No, nobody was left. They were all shot.
It seems like to have the strength to endure that and to go on is...
Life is stronger than anything else. Men will do everything to survive and to live.
Now, you said that you went to Russia at what point?
I ran away from the place where I was born. And for a while I was in places hiding till I came to Russia. And when I came to Russia, they gave me a job to make boxes for the bombs.
This was
during the war.
During the war,
yes.
In the 40s.
Yes.
40.
This was 42, 43, 44, 45. Yeah.
And you somehow found a place where they gave you work.
Yes, by my profession as a carpenter. Mm-hmm. I was making boxes for the bombs so they could send the bombs to the aeroplanes to bomb Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And how was it to live among these people that you didn't know them?
You see, I didn't know that much, but I knew, I had an idea what was going on with the Jews in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think how better I had, because I had a job, I was working, and I was surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the most important thing for a young man, to survive.
Mm-hmm. Who were you living with then? How did you find a place?
I had apartment first, and then I found my wife. This was on the Volga.
Was this
on the Volga?
A Russian?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived with her parents for a while, and then we got our own apartment because she also was a tailor, and she was making clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked, and she worked, and we didn't have it too bad. And then a daughter was born to us in 1944.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the best of times, but for me, it was the best of time. If you understand psychologically.
Yeah.
Because I survived.
Yeah.
Yes.
More than survived.
Yes.
More.
That's right.
You had a family?
There in Russia?
Yes.
Yes.
You made a new family.
Yes, my wife, then my daughter, and her parents. Yes. And we also had other people who survived, who are living with us in those days in Russia.
Was your wife's family Jewish?
No. No.
And could I ask you, politically, how it was to live under this system? Were you very political at that time?
I became more political during the war, when I was finding out more and more about genocide, and I became more political when I was reading the papers And I learned every day that the Red Army was chasing the Germans back to Germany. And I had a lot to live for, because I saw that civilization will be saved and men will be able to live after the defeat of the Nazis. So there was a lot to live for as a young man.
There was no effort to conscript you into the armies?
Yes, they asked me. When I came to Russia, they did ask me if I would join the army. And I said no. So they gave me the job to make.
I see.
To make.
Did you have pacifist convictions?
I didn't know anything but pacifism too much then. I learned every day about the world, about men's behavior, and what men can do to others. I learned it slowly. And I find out a lot. By 1945, when I was 25 years old, I think I knew a lot more than many others, what I saw and what I lived through. But philosophy, economics, and behavior of man, and the suffering of man.
Did you tell us where you were living in the Soviet Union?
The town was Buzuluk. Buzuluk. It's B-U-Z-U-L-U-C-K. Buzuluk. And this is, Buzuluk is on the Volga.
Was it sort of an accident that that's where you wound up?
Well,
was it in Russia itself?
Yes, it's about 900 kilometers west. I'm not sure geographically, but it was about 850-900 miles from Moscow. It was not far from Koibyshev, Orenburg, and Ulyanovsk on the Volga.
How did you happen to wind up there?
Well, but you go from one town to another, and finally you're young, you head up. You know, you find a girl and you stay.
Ah,
you
see? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You are alive, life goes on, you know.
Question here about your wife. You said you were married in 43. Which direction to go now? Should we bring you to the States?
Excuse me, how don't we get the names? We don't have names of the parents, we don't have names of your wife.
Oh, okay, maybe before we go on.
Yeah, that would be
good. I'm still here. If you can give us, for the archives.
Yes, my father's name was Kalman Schneider.
Carl.
Kalman. K-A-L-M-A-N. Kalman Schneider.
Was it spelled the same way you spelled?
No.
How is it spelled?
It's spelled differently. It spells S-C-H-N-I-D-E-R. Schneider. And my mother's name was Taiba Schneider. Taiba.
Okay.
She was in America, my mother.
She was in America?
Yes. They came, four of them, two brothers and two sisters, came to the United States in the beginning of the 20th century.
And then she came back?
Then she went back because her father had 400 rubles, like a diary. He had money and he wanted to give it to her. And she was getting her education here. So she went back to get it, and the second and the First World War broke out and she couldn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but her two brothers and sister lived here.
I see.
Yes.
So it was one of those, the brother that that sent for you.
Yes.
How do you spell that name?
What?
Your mother's name.
Taiba.
T.
Taiba would be, I guess, I don't know. How would you spell Taiba? Taiba.
T-Y-B.
Taiba, T-Y. B-A, Taiba, you know, Taipke, you know, I don't know. Yeah, Taiba.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. Kalman and Taiba.
And her maiden name?
Levine.
Oh, no.
Levine, that's what
I-N-E.
L-E-V-I-N-E-N-E-N, right? Levine.
And your sisters and
My sister was Gneshe. And my brother was Zorah.
Okay.
And also we visit the grave where they are laying often. Me and my wife.
When?
Well, we were in 1986. We were in Israel and we went to the place where I was born, and we were in 1990. So when I got there to Vilna, I visit the grave where they are buried.
So you've done it more than once.
Oh, many times.
Many
I went
times.
To Russia. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I just got the key. The mayor gave me the key to Buzuluk when I was there. I had the key here.
Oh, really? You've kept up with your contacts there.
Yes.
Do you write? Do you have a correspondence?
My wife found out 3 years ago, the Russians were here, if you remember. And I asked one of them, they stayed with us here, to find my wife's sister. And after 3-4 months, he found her, your biological sister. So I took her right away there, and my daughter went with me.
Oh.
Yes. And we visited them again after she didn't see her for 45 years.
Oh, that must have been very...
No. Like strangers.
Like strangers?
45 years.
They had grown apart.
Yes.
You no longer had much in common.
No, only they knew that they were biological sisters, same parent. But
was it disappointing in a way?
Well,
a reunion.
With me it would be different. I am more sensitive. With them, it was different also, and I don't understand the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
You know? If I would find my sister, she would be here already.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, that's life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm watching the time. Sort of. It's hard.
See, the most important thing is we lived in a town. It was in Eastern Europe, where everybody was doing their things, their families.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all perished, which it's very hard to explain why this happened to the Jewish people in Europe, where 6 million perished. We always say, never again. If anybody did anything to prevent this from happening again,
Even now?
Yes.
Even now?
Even now. We are doing the same thing we did before. We think we are the best, the smartest. We think we always know what we are doing. And we continue on doing that. But to prevent future destruction, future Holocaust, nobody's doing anything about it.
What do you think should be done?
Well, this is very philosophical because we are continuing to follow our ancestors' beliefs through the Torah. It is written in Hebrew, Lo erdal evyon mekereva aretz. In English, the poor will never be wiped from the face of the earth. We are doing things what pleases us. And sometimes I wonder if we care about others' feelings, emotions. We concentrate our energy. We work hard to accomplish our objectives through centuries. But history teaches us, all the way from Pharaoh in Egypt, the Babylonian times, the Venice ghettos, the Spanish Inquisition, the Tsarist pogroms, and the Holocaust in my time. And we never have time to think why those things happened to us and why they are still happening. And sometimes it bothers me a lot. We have a temporary peace. I'm speaking specifically about the Jewish people. But if the economy should deteriorate in this country, and if the conservative radical Republicans and the religious right should come to power here, which I think they will soon, God help us all. I know you didn't come for this, talk to me, but
oh yes, we did.
But I don't want to be too specific or too, but.
We want to get to that. I want to get to that moment.
I want to get to what you think ought to be done.
As long as we have religion and capitalism, it will never be good for the Jewish people. Never.
What do you mean, religion?
Religion and capitalism. See, Jewish people are, it's hard for them to integrate in new economic political systems. For an example, in Chile in 1970, when Salvador Allende came to power, 30,000 Jews lived there, 27,000 ran away. But on September 11, 1973, when Salvador Allende was assassinated by Nixon and Kissinger, most of the Jews came back when Pinochet took power, the fascist.
Pretty ironical.
It is, it's just, I told you one thing. It's something about us, I think, I write, and I try to come to understanding why we do those things, and it's very hard. In Russia, for an example, in 1939-40, no country in the world let the Jews in, but the Soviet Union did. Everyone who came from the Scandinavian countries, from everywhere, and it's history. They had to work there, so they stopped the railroad tracks. They wanted to go back. But Stalin wasn't a pleasant man in my mind. What he did with them, he didn't send them back. He sent them to Siberia. The one who registered to work, they lived among the rest of the population. They survived the war and they went home. But those who didn't want, they sent them to Siberia, and 99% survived after the war. So he saved their lives too.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody let them in except Russia. You can find it out.
That's interesting.
Yes, not one country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Telling you the truth, what I saw, what I read, and what I know, it's mm-hmm. all true. Sometimes it bothers me.